Good morning, everyone. If you could take your seats, we'll begin. Okay, so just a few points before we begin with our briefing from ICANN staff to give us an overview of the GTLD program. In terms of remote participation and interpretation, that is all available and set up, so we're monitoring remote participation. So those of you that have joined remotely, we can hear you if you want to speak, and you can also ask to speak. You can ask Jeannie. She's going to be monitoring the remote side of things. I think this will work quite smoothly, considering that, that not everybody is able to join us at the meetings, but there are issues that we wish to discuss that are really of broad concern, I think. So so that's all in place. We'll postpone a tour de table to make sure that we make good use of having our ICANN colleagues here to talk to us about the GTLD program. So to my right, Akram Atala, who is the COO at ICANN, and then to his right, Tariq Kamel, who is the advisor to the CEO at ICANN on government matters. So with that, I see we have some slides that Akram will present. And on our agenda, we have set aside about an hour just to give us a bit of context before we move ahead further with our discussions. And there's a long list of issues there, but what I think we're really looking for are key developments and a general sense of what are the results that have been posted and any key things still yet to come, so that we can plan our work in the GAC and anticipate some of those next key developments. So with that, I'll hand over to you, Akram.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you for attending the presentation, and thank you for inviting me to present. As the slide says, I'm not Christine Willett. Christine apologizes for not being able to make it today to present. We had a member of the staff that had a death in the family, and so she had to stay behind for a couple of days, and she will be joining us later in the week. Jeannie, please, can we? So the agenda is to, talk a little bit about the accomplishments since Toronto, show the timeline, spend some time on the initial evaluation status, we talk about the agreements and the contracts, pre-delegation testing, trademark clearinghouse, objections and dispute resolution processes. And I'm going to try to go quickly over that, over the slides, because you can all see them and read them. Most importantly, I want to give an opportunity to answer questions if you have any. So I'll try to move quickly, and please stop me if you have a question, or if you prefer to wait till the end, that also we can do it that way as well. Okay. Next slide, please. So as you can see, there was a large list of accomplishments since Toronto, not the least of which is that we started actually publishing the IE results. We did the prioritization draw, so we prioritized all of the applications. The board decided to put the IDNs first, so the IDNs are 1-1-08, I think, and after that comes the rest of the applications by priority, and we will publish the IE results based on those priorities. The key thing to remember is that the priority will be the way we will move forward at each step. So when we get to contracting, we will use the priorities to order the contracting process. When we get to pre-delegation testing, we will use the priorities to order them as they come to the pre-delegation testing. So the prioritization will be used every step of the way until delegation. The TMCH has opened, and I'll talk about that later. So we've actually made a lot of progress across the board. We've hit all of our timelines, and things are looking very good for us to delegate. Or not delegate, actually, but to sign our first contract, or our goal to sign the first contract is on April 23rd today. Now, we all know that there are a lot of issues that are on the table that we're discussing, and this is not a date fixed in stone. If we have to move the date to actually accommodate some issues, we will. But our goal is to actually sign the first contract on April 23rd.
Next.
So as you can see, the program is well on track. It's going to take us a few months to actually do all of the IE results. It will take longer to get all of the contracts signed and all the pre-delegation testing, and we are sticking to 20 applications per week on the pre-delegation testing and also going to IANA for delegation as well. It will be no more than 20 per week. So we're controlling the rate of getting into the route based on 20 per week applications.
Next.
So the initial evaluation were released on 22nd of March. The first set of results, the first 30 applications, and then we did another 30 a week later. And tomorrow we will do the rest of the applications in the IDN. So by tomorrow we would be done with all of the IDNs, 108 applications. And the outcome so far is in three categories. There is a pass, there is an eligible for extended evaluation, and then there is ineligible for extended evaluation. So these are the three categories that the applications will fall through. Some of the applications actually have not been, the results have not been posted yet because there is some delay on a response for a clarifying question, or there is some missing information that the applicant is providing us. So there are a few that will be updated within the next couple of weeks, and that's also noted on the website as well.
Thank you, Jeannie.
So this is a picture of the initial application report. We have a basically two reports, one that is public, that's available on the website, and it has pretty much all the information that's available for the applicant, except that the applicant has some confidential information that's not showing on the report, on the public report.
Next.
So as you can see, these are the results. The majority of the panels have done a lot of progress. The bigger jobs, which are basically on the financial and technical and registry services, are the ones that we're doing as we go. The majority of the rest have been all done, and we're posting the results on all of those, except for background screening, which we're not actually posting results on that. But most of the work has been done. And as the slide mentions, there were 35 applications withdrawn, and we are allowing applicants to withdraw their applications and getting their $130,000 back from their fee up to the initial evaluation, and that will be rolling. So if your applicant priority 1,000, you can stay in there until your application turn comes in, and if you withdraw right before that, you'll still get your 130K back. So on the registry agreement, we believe we're very close. We've been working with the registries and a lot of the ICANN community on the agreements, and we think that we've made a lot of progress to include them to ask them to work only with registrars that would have signed the 2013 RAA. And the reason for this is that we believe the 2013 RAA has a lot of features that will enhance the entire space for the restaurants. It has all the law enforcement requirements. It has registrants' rights and responsibilities, almost like a bill of rights for restaurants. So there is a lot of enhancements in the 2013 RAA that we believe will make the domain industry much better and much more better behaved, let's say. So we believe that it's a good thing to have all of the registrars sign the new agreement and have the registries work with the registrars that have the new agreement to sign to be able to register in the new GTLD program. We've also included the PIC spec. As you all know, there were 508 PIC specs received and posted from applicants. I believe that was a very good outcome that met all the requirements of the GAC as well as kept ICANN in out of having to control or having to deal with content, which was our biggest fear. So the PIC spec allowing applicants to make commitments, yet not having ICANN play the compliance role on the PIC spec, but have the community or the public be able to protest if they are not compliant with the PIC spec, and then ICANN will step up to enforce the outcome of that dispute resolution. So I think this was a very good outcome for the GAC as well as ICANN and restaurants as a public at large as well. The public comment period closed the 17th of March. We continue to discuss the agreement with the registries, and we just posted the latest version, not for public comment, but for transparency to make sure that everybody is aware of what progress have been made on the agreement so far. So the applicants will be eligible to move into the contracting phase after Beijing, and once they have passed their IE results. And like I said, we are targeting April 23rd to be the day when we signed the first agreement. There are issues that we're still working on, but we believe that everything is in place given the timeline that it will take for an applicant to move through the process and get to delegating their first registration. So on the pre-delegation testing pilot, we've actually asked applicants to submit for a pilot testing, we've had a lot of applicants, so we decided to pick the one of each of the back-end providers to broaden as many as possible, the number of back-end providers that would go through the testing and be ready for that. So we picked 12 of the back-end providers, and therefore, if there were many applicants for one back-end provider, we just picked the first one in the priority order, and therefore we maximized the coverage, and this way most of the back-end providers will be ready when the time comes to connect to and do the pre-delegation testing. So the resources are in place. They're doing. They started. They sent out the spec, and I think that right now we're starting the pre-delegation, the pilot testing already. We should be up and running and ready to operate even before the April 23rd. On the trademark clearinghouse, I don't know when we updated you last, but what we did is we actually separated the functions of the trademark clearinghouse into two functions. One function that we contracted Deloitte to do, not exclusively, and that function is to actually accept the trademarks into the trademark clearinghouse and do the validation of the marks. That contract is not exclusive, therefore it allows us to actually add more validators on the front end if we need to have more validators, both for bandwidth and competition reasons. On the other side of the TMCH, there is actually the trademark clearinghouse itself, the database where all the marks will be put, and then the provider that will actually do the sunrise and claims, where all the registries will sign up with, and they will perform their sunrise period with and get their notifications or the claims period as well. That contract we just signed with IBM, I think we have more details on that. But the TMCH, from the marks perspective, has opened, I recall that on the 26th of March, within one day, there were over 150 applicants that were verified and enabled, and over, I want to say, 10 or 12 trademarks that were already verified and put in the database. So the trademark clearinghouse is operational from the trademark from the trademark holder's perspective. And it needs to be open for 90 days before the first sunrise can start. So that gives you an idea when the first sunrise will happen. The IBM, on the other hand, we've signed the contract with them, and they're starting to develop their systems to be able to support the sunrise and claims. And they actually will have a spec, I think, before Beijing, published before next week, for all of the registries that want to start connecting to the IBM trademark clearinghouse for the sunrises. And that contract as well is not exclusive, but I believe it will be very difficult to have another database, because we would have to deal with two databases if we did want to do another contract. But I think that the split of the two contracts makes operations a lot more competitive and more affordable, both for the trademark holders as well as for the registries and registrars. On the objections and dispute resolutions, we've actually had, 274 objection filings, and they're broken down by the objection provider. We've had also our independent objector also file a lot of objections, as you can see up there, which I cannot see. and all of the objections will have to go through before any application that has an objection can move forward, even if they pass their initial evaluation. So pass initial evaluation, but before they contract, they have to finish all of their objections. Thanks. Next. So these are the slide on the independent objector objections, and they're all available on the website as well. So the sessions that we're having in Beijing are all listed here. Most of them are happening on the first day, on Monday. There's a couple of sessions also on Thursday, I think, and the Wednesday. But most of them will happen in the big room on Monday. And we invite you to attend these sessions as well. Okay. So now I'd like to open it for any questions and clarifications that anybody might have.
Thank you for that presentation, Akram. Are there any questions at this point? Italy, please.
Yes, thank you. I would like to make a question on the importance of a date. Because by saying that we plan to have the first agreement means contract, with an applicant by 23rd of April is a very important point for different reasons, and this might make to ask some questions. It is important because also in the governments we are discussing in this period about the insertion of new GTLDs, and this will be a demonstration that things are really happening, and it is very important to establish a start of the implementation. And my question about this is, of course, you are convinced that a small number, or the first one, let's say, they are already ready to be approved and then put into the IANA database. So the question is, the progress of the analysis of a number of these applications do not encounter, or you verify that do not encounter, of course, GAC advice in the past, but not only that, also all the commentary that came from the community. I mean, the several thousand of problems that were in this consultation period. The final point is, are you sure that when you approve something that falls into category of, let's say, geographic names or competition or whatever, or, that the one that you will approve in the first slide, in the first part, let's say, do not create a precedent into the discussion concerning category of problems, like geographic names or whatever. So, and then when you will go ahead with other groups, then something that was already been approved has a consequence that you should go in the same line or perhaps correct. This is the point. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefano. I just want to be clear on the process. When we signed the contract for an applicant, that means basically they passed all of the requirements from the guidebook. it doesn't mean that they actually can go to the IANA for contracting, because there is still a one step called the pre-delegation testing. And the pre-delegation testing will have to happen right before they go to apply to IANA. So somebody could have a contract, but they could choose to delay when they go to pre-delegation testing, or they could go through pre-delegation testing and then delay to go apply for IANA. So these are not something that we have control over. The applicant has to be ready to do these things. And that's the normal process today, even for a CCNSO, for example. They do their testing before they go to IANA, so and part of the process there. On the GAC advice, the reason we are pushing back and we're not, as you saw, we had already, I think, short of the first sets of 30 and 30, initial evaluation results published, but we did not actually start talking about contracts because we are waiting for the GAC advice to come out first. And of course, when we get the GAC advice, we will have to, the board will have to consider it and then have to decide what's the next step. But regarding the date, there is no project or any process that can be developed if you don't set targets. So we have to set target dates and we have to try to achieve them. Otherwise, we will be here in, you know, 2100 talking about the new GTLD program and when it's going to take place. So, the April 23rd is our target date for signing the first contract. We're hoping that everything comes together at the right time for us to move forward. There are things that will prevent us from moving forward. We'll have to deal with them and decide how we go again. But this is how, you know, this program has been designed and operates that way. So, but there's no intention for us to ignore anything material or that concerns the internet just for the sake of hitting a date. Let's be clear on that. So, from the precedent issue, I think that we do have concerns about that, and we are trying as much as possible for ICANN to stick to the guidebook, because if we stick to the guidebook, I think everybody will be, I think the results will be the most accurate and, straightforward, and we would not have to worry about precedents. Once we move away from the guidebook, then there will be issues of, you know, why did we do that, and then we can get into trouble. So that's our guidance, is we're trying to stick to the guidebook. We know that there are some issues that have come up that are requiring clarity, and we're working with the board and the community on all of them. But our intention is to stick to the guidebook as much as we can.
Thank you for that reply, Akram. Are there any other questions? Australia, please.
Thank you very much. It's a very useful update on all the work that's been going on. Obviously, a lot of work going on. Just have a couple of questions about the public interest commitment component of that work. A couple of particular questions. I apologize if it should already be clear and that I've missed it somewhere, but two things that have occurred to me. One is the standing for making, I'm not sure what the right word is, an objection or an intervention if a third party thinks that a public interest commitment is not being followed. I think I saw some initial wording around that someone had to materially impact them or something along those lines. And I'm interested in whether governments would be able to raise those sorts of concerns on behalf of their constituents. So it may not be that a government is particularly impacted directly, but they may want to raise concern if it's a particularly sensitive sector. And this, my second question relates to the ability to amend PICs. So if an applicant does submit a public interest commitment and it is accepted and so on, are they able to later amend it? And if so, is there a process for that? Is it the normal change process, for example? Obviously, I think, well, certainly from our perspective, from the government's point of view, we've been looking for clarity here. We initially had things which were in the applications which weren't commitments. Now we're looking at binding contractual commitments, and governments will be looking very carefully at those, but interested in the ability then to simply change them down the track.
Thank you for the question. So for the PIC to begin with, if somebody wants to change their PICs after they actually submit them, they can do so if the change was accepted, it would have to go into public comment period for everybody to be aware of what their change is. And basically, although we're not today reviewing the PICs ourselves, if there is a change request that's going to be made, we're going to get legal advice on it, because we want to make sure that there is no gaming or promising something and then later on coming and taking it off the table after they pass or they get their contract. So that will be a step that we will make sure it happens. But also we will make sure it goes into public comment and for at least a 30-day period for everybody to see it and make sure that we didn't miss anything either. So I'm sorry, I forgot the first one.
Sorry for two at once. The first one was standing for objections, where the governments will be able to raise issues that they see on behalf of constituents.
Yes, absolutely. Our intention is that the governments will be able to do that, given their public interest status, that they actually act on the public interest of the public that they protect. So, yes.
Thank you. I have a small follow-up question to Peter's, and that was concerning the PIC spec. So he was asking whether an applicant can make an amendment to one of the commitments that they have made already. I have heard some express an interest in filing public interest commitment specifications where they didn't at all. So you'll be aware that some applicants didn't file commitments. So I was wondering whether you had any comments on that. Thank you.
So, although we're all about process, the process should not trump the cause, right? So we're trying to be... to do the right thing for everybody, and so if somebody wants to come late in the game and say, okay, I need to put add to my PIC spec certain commitments, we're going to actually work with the applicant and make sure that they have the ability to do that. It might delay them a little bit, but we will try not to make that a deciding factor for them not to do it, because it's a if it's a good thing to do, we don't want them to back off of that because of the operational or delay issues. So we will work with them to make sure that they can do it without major delays.
Thank you. Netherlands, please.
Thank you, Heather. Yes, thank you for your very interesting presentation, in the sense that... It's good to hear that there's progress made in the whole operational implementation. I would like to come back to the question of Italy, because I think it's quite relevant, and to focus down what I think is a concern and a question. Maybe you cannot answer it. Maybe the board should. Is the fact that we will give our final between brackets advice on GTLDs. Which was also, the expectation from everybody knew this, also the board is expecting this. What are the possibilities that if safeguards, which the GEC would like to have extra safeguards on certain applications. If this needs contractual change, for example, if we advise that these safeguards should be, let's say the only way would be, because there are other ways, of course, to have safeguards implemented, but if one of the ways is to be to have it in the contracts, what is the possibility of putting this in the contract? It's a difficult question, but okay.
I think that the board will have to make a decision based on the GAC advice that comes to them. And if the board decides that they need to some more time to make a decision, then we would have to wait for that to happen. So we will not enter into a contract before all of these things are actually addressed. But our aim is that if the GAC advice comes after Beijing or during Beijing, that we will have 2 to 3 weeks to finalize whatever we need to do for the advice and at least decide whether the schedule changes or we can stick to the schedule as it is.
Thank you. I have UK next, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning, everybody, and thank you, Akram, for a very comprehensive account of all the work that's been going on. It's very helpful. I just want to come back to the issue of public interest commitments, and I think my worry is that, first of all, those commitments that have been made are going to sort of be hidden away, are not going to be easy to track or even to find out. So my first question is, what is ICANN's intentions with regard to maximizing awareness by registry operators of their commitments? Will ICANN provide some facility through its website where this is very highly visible, firstly? Secondly, will there be requirements on the operators to maximize the visibility of these commitments so that stakeholders, including governments, can quickly determine what commitments were made when they start to hear about issues about how the business is being conducted? As I say, I think the important issue here is being able to determine quickly what are the commitments, and secondly, what is the process for submitting a complaint or a concern that those commitments are not being adhered to or being disregarded or amended without anybody being fully aware of it. So, as I say, it's a general concern that this was a very welcome initiative, as you say, in response to GAC concerns. But we must ensure that there's maximum visibility here, so that we can, any stakeholder can quickly check, this is what this operator of this domain undertook to do and adhere to certain principles and safeguards and so on. So that's great. And then secondly, how can we follow up a situation where an operator has not made any commitments? So that's, I think, an issue for us, but I think also for ICANN. I think a lot of us on the government side were expecting ICANN to be actively sort of taking charge here and monitoring and taking to task operators who are not fulfilling their obligations under these voluntary commitments. I note the process now, which is one of submitting to a dispute resolution process. But from what I understand you have said and from looking at the papers, it seems that ICANN is sort of stepping back and leaving it really to the community to take advantage of these commitments. And so ICANN is not actively monitoring and not intervening, only reacting when there is a dispute tabled. So I guess my point is tabled by disappointment that ICANN has kind of detached itself in that way. Also, my concern is that there may be operators who should be making commitments that aren't, and what is the process for amending that situation? Given that it's not going to be easy for stakeholders, including us in governments, you know, to be constantly, you know, checking things and seeing how so many of these hundreds of new domains are actually being rolled out in practice. It's, you know, it's a very resource intensive function we're talking about here. And as I say, I think there was certainly expectation from my side that ICANN would have a much more involved role here in terms of public interest commitments. Sorry, I've kind of expanded my questions quite a bit in that intervention, but I think, as I say, it's a question about visibility and ensuring that this whole area of commitments is going to be functioning in a way that's going to serve the interests of the entire community of users, stakeholders, everybody. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark. On the PixSpec visibility, we have posted those already on the website. So if you go to any applicant, you could actually get to their PixSpecs and you could look at them. We are moving to a better CRM, customer relationship management tool, that will be up and running by the end of the year, hopefully, that will actually be easier to navigate, and we will have a lot more information about every TLD that we will have and registrar as well. So there will be more opportunities to make these picks more visible and easier to understand and to track. So I think we can take that and make it better than it is today. The issue of ICANN not monitoring, the original problem or the original issue when it came up, and I'm going to be very frank with that, is that it's such a big issue that ICANN is not suited to actually be the monitor of, you know, all sorts of things, content, which restaurant has certain rules, you know, are they following them? I mean, there could be rules as simple as, you know, only people who are 18 years old that live in and or older who live in certain area that, you know, can register on this TLD. For ICANN to be able to monitor that and say, you know, that we can guarantee that, you know, there is good compliance with these rules, is a task that is, I believe, beyond, you know, even an organization 10 times the size of ICANN. So the idea of the PixSpec came about in that we would hold the applicant responsible to their commitments. We would have the public monitor how the TLD is behaving. And if there is an issue with the TLD, then the people who are affected can come up and do a raise an objection or a dispute with the TLD. Once the dispute resolution process comes out with a finding on the issue, then ICANN steps in and makes sure that the TLD is behaving accordingly making sure that the ruling is in place. I think that's a great improvement. I think that ICANN by itself couldn't do the job that is needed, but I think that the community now has a mechanism to be able to implement these things. Regarding the applicants that have not applied for PIX back, the PIX back came about as an idea that allowed it tied the early warning. It provided the applicants a way to react to early warnings before GAC advice comes out. So what it did, it allowed applicants that were worried that they're going to get advice because maybe their application is not clear or their commitments are not clear, that they could clarify these commitments to mitigate that risk. If an applicant has not applied for and put in their commitments, they can always do so, as we just talked earlier. I think that the GAC, if they feel like this is needed, they can still provide the advice. And so from that perspective, I think the PIX spec is doing what it was meant to do for without being unimplementable. So I think it hit all of the needed requirements that were put on the applications.
Thank you, Akram. I'm going to go to the speaking order, and then if we have time, we'll take additional. Okay, so next I have Switzerland, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Thomas Schneider. I work for the Swiss government. First of all, I would like to thank you for this interesting presentation. And my remark and or question follows on what has been raised as concern by the UK and Australian and other colleagues. And it's about this public interest commitment procedure. Apart from the, let's say, resource factor, which is problematic for us as well, and I'm slightly amazed to hear that ICANN doesn't have the resources in monitoring certain aspects. And I'm not talking about monitoring content, because that was never the idea that ICANN should go into monitoring content. But if you look at the government, we are not able to multiply our tax revenues or incomes, whatever you call it, as ICANN has been able to with this new GTLD process. We have to live with less and less resources as governments, and it's not only for us as a small administration, it's becoming a severe problem to follow this very complex process, and I'm afraid we are not probably the only ones who are not in a position to follow hundreds of new commitments, changing commitments, and so on and so forth. So I would appeal to ICANN to take into account the fact that also government's resources are limited and probably more and more limited depending on how the economic situation in some regions of the world progress. But apart from the logistical or resource problems, we have another problem with this whole concept that first we thought that we had the impression and we thought that was confirmed throughout the development and the work on the applicant guidebook that basically an application, once it's filed, cannot be changed. That was the way we understood the rules in the guidebook in order to avoid gaming, in order to have a fair process to competitors who apply for the same string or for similar things. And the only remedies, in a way, and we discussed this with regard to reactions to GAC advice that would be allowed, at least that was the way that we perceived it, were, for instance, sending letters of support or things like that after a GAC advice. but we had the understanding that there would be no substantive change of an application that would be allowed once it's been filed. And now with these public interest commitments, we got the feeling that basically, you can add and change and amend whatever you want, and it's very difficult to say where is the line between, as you say, clarifying commitments and adding new commitments or changing, amending commitments. And it's not only for us, we realize that also for others, also for applicants themselves or competitors, this concept seems to be very difficult, but we have similar difficulties that we don't really know what the value of this is, or how we should how we should take this into account, to what extent, because we are not clear with the effects, with the legal effects, but also with the effects on competitors and so on and so forth that these public interest commitments have. So we have a real problem with the concept of this. We see the good intentions behind it, but we are not yet convinced that this will actually make our lives easier than, or instead of making it more complicated. So, and there's also another problem of we have been contacted by a number of applicants that have maybe spent more time and resources before they filed their application in thinking of public interest commitments, and they are afraid that their commitments are just now just copy-pasted by competitors, and they care about whether the others that now maybe copy-paste their commitments are actually able to implement these commitments, and how ICANN will make sure that these commitments are implemented. There are a number of questions that are not clear to competitors, but also to us, who are supposed to give advice on things that we don't really fully understand. And in the end, what counts for us is that we have some clarity on the procedure, on the statutes of these commitments, and we have the tendency to say we can only take into account in whatever we give advice on those aspects or those things where we know that they will be enforced by ICANN, where we have some insurance that they will actually hold against abuses and just pretending to do things or not to do things. So this is what counts for us. What ICANN is telling us that they are able to implement and enforce and make sure that words are actually meant and also taken into action. Thank you.
Thank you, Switzerland. Did you have comments? That's okay. We can continue. Okay, so I have Norway next, please.
Yes, thank you, and good morning to everyone. We also have comments in some in line with some of the others. As also UK was mentioning about who is going to go through all the applicants and make assessment of what applicants should have posted public interest commitments or not. And that is something that also should be done, performed by someone. The other thing with the public interest commitment is that, as we have understood, they are a volunteer. Maybe they should have been made mandatory for certain types of applicants, maybe. Because also the main point also that Switzerland made is about the commitments, are they then enforceable? And also, especially also when you're talking about later changes to the public commitment, the commitments, are they then going into any contract compliance things? So of course, there is a link between these public interest commitments and the contract terms, and that also is linked then to how to enforce if they have committed to something. So that makes a lot of questions, really, how to deal with these. We must say that we are very much in line with the comments of Switzerland that governments will not be able to monitor changes or any breaches of these, and I think there must be put in place a system for monitoring, and I think that obligation should be on ICANN to be able to monitor that all the applicants comply with the requirements. So I think that's something that must be sorted out. So thank you.
Thank you, Norway. Okay, I have three more requests on the list. I have Denmark, Germany, and then Brazil, and then we'll try to conclude this briefing. Okay, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'll try to be brief. I have a couple of questions about the pigs as well. Australia was kind enough to already put forward one of the questions about how governments can demonstrate measurable harm, and I think I understood you correctly that we will be able to, even though it might be indirectly. So I can put that on the record. Thank you. And the next question is, how will ICANN decide whether to follow the sanctions recommended by the PIC DRP? I think it is described or formulated as you can follow the recommendations. So my question is, will there be a clear and transparent criteria as to when you actually decide to follow the recommendation? It doesn't say that you will follow the recommendation no matter what. It says you can follow the recommendation. So the next question is, based on other dispute resolution procedures, what is the expected fee level? I think we have to remember that this is taxpayers' money if it is a government that needs to put forward a case. And finally, a question about you make reservations about that you cannot go back and change registrations that have already been in place. So it will be future registrations that will be changed after a PIC DRP process. So my question is, if there is actually serious damage that has been a result of the past registration policy, why then is there no measures to remediate that harm? Thank you.
Yes, please, Akram.
I don't think I understood the last point. There are no registrations done yet. So if you put your PIC specs and you actually... So could you explain?
Yeah. The question is that when a government, for example, wants to put forward a case that there's been a breach about a PIC, and then when the case has been finalized in the panel, I think the paper you put forward says something like that you cannot go back and remediate the registrations that have been done prior to the PIC DRP process. You can only handle future registrations. So my question is, if there has been a serious damage before the PIC DRP, what will there be no measures to remediate that harm? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, all right. So we have Germany and Brazil next, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and also thank you for the presentation. I think it was quite informative for us. Also my remarks go in line with many remarks of colleagues. One question is the question of resources. That is something you have to share, and we fully are in the position to share the position of Switzerland in this case. And I just want to recall that we are talking about more than 1,000 documents that were published not so long ago, I think 3 weeks ago, and it's impossible for governments even to have a glance on these documents or knowing what we are talking about. And I think this question of public interest commitments is one of the core works the GAC is committed to follow. And insofar, it may prove to be problematic for the GAC, because we are the GAC, we are the Advisory Committee for Public Policy Issues, and it is difficult that in such a late stage of the application, we now receive relevant documents. Insofar, I think you also need to be aware that it's complicated for the GAC to follow details, and also monitoring. It is not possible from our side to go in a depth discussion. And what I also agree with the colleagues from Denmark and others, what we probably need to additional clarifications is the dispute resolution procedure we now have established and how it works. And also this is something we maybe internally will exchange in a GAC meeting here and try to find a position how we can evaluate this issue, because it's also brand new for us. When I recall when we met in Toronto, the situation was totally different in this respect. And I also want to share Thomas' position in respect of copy and pasting intellectual property of some of the applicants who had very strict and strong consideration how they would use and would like to use the application. And then we are now going to allow everybody to and competitors to use this intellectual property in another sense. And therefore, we see some positive aspect in this approach, but nevertheless, it needs to be further discussed and considered what are the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Germany. So I have Brazil and United States. Okay. You'll be brief. All right. So Brazil, please.
Thank you, Heather. Good morning, everybody. I would say good night because in my country it's 11:15 p.m. and my biological clock is still in that time frame. But anyway, my name is Franklin Neto. I'm the representative of Brazil in GAC. I would like to thank very much Akran for the very clear presentation. And I think one of the greatest values of this kind of meeting is just for all the different parts of ICON to know what each other is doing at that very moment. And then I would like to return to the question that was made from my colleague from Italy, and also Netherlands has mentioned it. And I would like, I would appreciate if you could elaborate a little bit more on this topic, because it did not get very clear to me what would be the position of ICON regarding to the possible, like it was framed by the Italian colleague, the possible precedent that these agreements that would possibly be signed on the 23rd of April would set in terms of the other GTRDs and categories that fall in the same field. We are discussing this week in GAC, and this is one of the reasons why the meeting is extended. We are discussing not only specific GTRDs, but we also be discussing categories. And it's very there's a great possibility that some of these IDN GTLDs, which possibly could have the first agreement signed on the 23rd of this month, would fall into one of these categories that GAC will be discussing and that could be a GAC advice. Then I would appreciate if you could elaborate how we would work if there could happen some. The time frames would be different between the GAC advice and what you are intending to do with in terms of contract signing, in terms of agreement with this IDN GTLDs. Should there be an advice that for some reason can also reach, considering that these advices are in category level, could reach one of these IDN GTLDs. Thank you.
So, as I mentioned earlier, I think that the reason the
date was chosen to be April 23rd is because we wanted to hear from the GAC and on the GAC advice and see what the board comes back with on that before we can move forward. So as I mentioned earlier, we will wait for the GAC advice, wait for the board reasoning on that and how they will handle the GAC advice before we sign any contract. So we will not put ourselves in a position to sign a contract and then have a contract change later. I mean, that's not going to be something that we that's good for ICANN or for the community. So we will not behave that way. We will make sure that there's clarity on the board reply to the GAC, and from there we can decide if we can move forward or if we need to finish, change the contract before we move forward or what actions we have to do. So I hope that's clear.
Thank you. Okay, United States, please.
Sorry about that. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very, very much, Akram, for the presentation. Extremely helpful. I'm fortunate to come at the tail end of interventions by all of my colleagues because they've said it all quite well, and hopefully we have left you with a strong sense of the intention to be a good partner to ICANN as you proceed apace with these public interest commitments. We strongly support the concept. And I think that as a result of our exchanges over the next few days, hopefully we will be delivering you advice that will shed more light as to some of the safeguards. I believe it was the Netherlands who was very clear as to what our game plan is. It is to develop terminology, language, that we would like very much to see in the contracts. And so it does have a bearing on the nature of the PIC specs, voluntary, mandatory. So hopefully you are now, having sat with us this morning, you have a sense of what you should probably expect by the end of the meeting. And so I'm very grateful for that. And we are hopeful that we are going to be as clear as we can possibly be. So I just wanted to concur with a lot of the comments that have been made. And I sense that you will be coming back to us, and I think that's very, very useful, that we can kind of move ahead jointly, because we will want to see sort of the results of our deliberations actually reflected in the contracts. And then I just would like to close with a question. So we are aware of the strings that have been the targets or the subjects of the different objections, if you will. However, the actual substance of the objections, could you please confirm they are not presently available, to my knowledge? And when might they be? Because it's very hard to talk about them when we don't know the substance of the actual objections. I just wanted to confirm that I haven't missed something somewhere and that you will, in fact, be making those available. Thank you.
So I apologize for not knowing the answer to your question, but we will get back to you with the answer. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so with that, I would like to thank Akram and Tarek for coming to brief us today. Not only was it, I think, informative for colleagues in the GAC, but I think it also, as colleagues have pointed out, been useful for you to get a sense of what really are the issues that are front of mind for governments here. We can expect to continue that exchange and develop our thinking further on this, given that we do have some key deadlines or planning deadlines anticipated by ICANN for the program. And for the GAC, as we come up with additional questions, I am confident that staff will remain available to us if there are specific things that we would like to ask them as we continue our meetings through the week. So let's make a point of making that work. Akram, yes, please.
So I just want to thank the GAC for the enormous amount of work that you've put into this program. I really want you to know that it's appreciated, it's not dismissed, and we are partners in this, and we are all working for the same end goal at the end. And I took a lot of notes from what I've heard, and there are a lot of things that we can do operationally that might not be contractual or anything else that we could actually work on for more transparency, more visibility, facilitating some of maybe not monitoring but guiding complaints maybe in the at the end goal toward the PICs. And so there are a lot of things that we can do operationally to facilitate the implementation of the PICs after they are in place. But I want to urge you to remember that the PICs are not in ICANN's remit. The way it was designed is that it's an outside process, and we would make sure that any outcome of dispute resolutions will be enforced by ICANN. And so that is the overall thinking behind the PICs PAC, and I think it's actually a very good tool that will enable us in the future. So thank you very much for the time and for the effort. Thank you.
Thank you again. Okay, so for the GAC, we have a coffee break. There should be coffee available outside the room. And if we could take 30 minutes and no more, please, because we do want to start, I think, getting into our own discussions within the committee. So 30 minutes. Thank you.